Sound Opinions is supported by Dark Matter Coffee, an importer and roaster of direct-sourced coffees, offering a variety of signature blends and barrel-aged selections at darkmattercoffee.com. Dark Matter Coffee. Get freshly roasted.
The moon was a trip on a dark hood, and they were driving round and round. Vinyl Willie, toe weeping Nellie. I'm gonna bootleize you, baby. I'm gonna bootleize you, lady.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And today we are taking a plunge into the depths of an artist who is notoriously difficult for many music fans to enjoy. But we, and many other critics, or at least a few, Greg, think he's a genius. I'm talking about the one and only Captain Beefheart.
So at this point, you're probably thinking, who is Captain Beefheart? Why are we talking about him? Well, let me tell you, he's influenced many, many artists across many generations. John Cale, Sonic Youth, Jack White. White just reissued Beefheart's most famous recording, in many estimations, Trout Mask Replica, on his own label, Third Man Records. Gary Lucas, a longtime collaborator with Beefheart, has just put out a Beefheart tribute record, and we're going to talk to Gary Lucas later on in the show. And in many ways, he'd been hiding out in plain sight. He had been a presence and an influence and an artist that people talked about through the classic rock era in the 60s on into the 70s. When punk and post-punk came around, he seemed more relevant than ever. He was on the Letterman show as a guest. He was on Saturday Night Live. He was signed to major labels like A&M and Reprise. So we think it's high time, Jim, for an assessment, a reassessment of a great artist who hasn't gotten his due.
We are going to try to tell you the tale of an eccentric musician today who really pushed the boundaries of what rock and roll could sound like.
Tonight there'll be ice cream. Ice cream for Crow.
For the uninitiated, we're going to explore who this man was, why the music is important, and why, dare I say, it's magical. Greg, you start us off.
Thank you, Jim. Indeed, an eccentric. Born Don Glenn Vliet in 1941 in Glendale, California, and he was a precocious kid. He was dabbling in art, music, sculpture in a very early age. He began focusing on music after meeting a similarly inclined young man in high school by the name of Frank Zappa.
Antelope Valley High School.
Can you imagine Captain Beefheart and Frank Zappa in high school?
On the edge of the desert.
Yes,
right, I know.
It happened in our history. Early on, Beefheart was interested in music, had an affinity for it. He was a multi-instrumentalist, self-taught. He had a tremendous range as a vocalist. Some people said it was 3.5 octaves, which is pretty prodigious for a young man essentially untrained. It started out in a fairly conventional blues-based rock band. Their first single was the Bo Diddley Willie Dixon song Diddy Wah Diddy, released in 1966. He was being touted by his record label as the great white blues singer, the next great one. But he had no interest in doing any of that. I think when we talk about Beefheart, we cannot talk about his music without mentioning these musicians that gravitated into his orbit and were quickly recruited by him to perform in what was called the Magic Band. There were several incarnations of the Magic Band, but I think the one that people probably recognized the most was that early incarnation that included John French, Jeff Cotton, Bill Harkleroad, Mark Boston, and Victor Hayden, who were nicknamed Drumbo,
yes.
Antenna Jimmy Siemens, Zoot Horn Rollo, Rocket Morton, and the Mascara Snake.
They all got rechristened, Greg. It was as if they were a cartoon super band like the Banana Splits or Josie and the Pussycats.
So with this band and its various incarnations, he began putting out records in the late 60s. Safe as Milk came out in 1967.
Song before song blues.
Last studio record of his lifetime as a recording artist came out in 1982, Ice Cream for Crow.
The pasture is tense. The pasture is tense. No, you got the wrong idea. No, you got the wrong intent.
There were like a dozen studio albums in there with various incarnations of the band. He basically retired from music in the early 90s for good. He really didn't do much for the last three decades of his life and focused on his art and sculpture. And didn't play any music for the most part. Died at the age of 69 in 2010, leaving behind this incredible legacy that musicians continue to pick up on, Jim.
A very important legacy, Greg. I think in terms of the surreal, psychedelic humor in the lyrics, there is no Robin Hitchcock without Captain Beefheart.
Yeah, swarm.
In terms of the musical invention and that gruff voice, you hear it in Tom Waits.
Battle pig, back bones in a danger zone. There's a rumbling ground down below.
You hear it in, PJ Harvey, especially when she's working with John Parrish. Pear Ubu, the fractured new wave energy, and also Devo. Heavily influenced by Beefheart, as was Public Image Limited, John Lydon's post-Sex Pistols band. Lester Bangs, my great rock critic hero, was, high on atop his list of all-time favorites was Captain Beefheart. He called Beefheart the one true Dadaist in rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
There was this surreal, psychedelic approach. There are so many stories that Beefheart told about his own career. He claimed early on to be a vacuum cleaner salesman who sold a vacuum to Aldous Huxley, the champion of psychedelic exploration, the author of The Doors of Perception, as well as Brave New World. Is that true? I don't know, but it's such a great story. Who cares? Beefheart claims that he didn't finish high school because anybody who's in a school of fish just has to jump out and chart your own way. He said he approached music the way a painter like Jackson Pollock would approach a canvas. And there is a lot of just throwing color on a canvas, musically, rhythmically, lyrically.
The harmony smile, the harmony snatch. Only a crow would peck and a ticky would scratch.
He's a big personality. He's a bit of a tyrant. Several people who were in the Magic Band, most notably John French, Drumbo, have written about the experience. They make it sound. In fact, Drumbo uses the comparison like being a member of the Manson cult. You're living communally. The captain's making you work 18 hours a day.
You're not getting paid.
You're not getting paid.
Yeah.
And the music is weird and nobody likes it. I think an interesting point of comparison, because they were friends, they were high school buddies, is with Frank Zappa. Zappa was prolific. Zappa was hailed as a genius who merely dabbled in rock while bringing the high art avant-garde concepts of composers like Varese to the rock and roll world.
I might be moving to Montana soon.
You know, Beefheart's different, man. He's in the dirt. He's a garage rocker, right? Zappa famously denigrated the Seeds and garage rock like pushing too hard. No. Beefheart loved that. The early records that are very bluesy, very garagey, are all about that. And only then, after mastering that, did he go into avant jazz, Coltrane and Coleman being huge influences on him. He only took it to Mars after he mastered being here on Earth. Greg, I love the later records that were coming out in the new wave era and were being such a huge influence on everything post-punk. But I think the all-time masterpiece, released in June 1969 on Frank's Frank Zappa's Straight Records label is Trout, Mask, yeah. Replica. What an insane album.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think I've said this on the show before. You throw a great party, but it's 4 a.m. You want to get rid of the people who are still there. There are 3 records to play. One is Metal Machine Music by Lou Reed, which is unlistenable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number 3 on the list is God, Ween, Satan, another band that wouldn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Ween without Zappa. Right in the middle is Trout, Mask, Replica. And if anybody stays after you play that, then that's going to be the best friend you've ever had in your life. Lester Bangs called that record 4 sides of juicy swamp brine jambalaya Rugalator, and that's as good a description as
that's,
any.
That's pretty brilliant.
You 28 know, songs.
I don't think there's a way to describe his music in a way that does it justice, really. But one comparison that springs immediately to mind when I first heard Trout Mask was the reaction that that record caused was very similar to what a guy by the name of Ornette Coleman caused,
yes,
in the jazz community when he started releasing records in the late 50s, early 60s. There were people who wanted to hit Ornette Coleman. They actually,
yeah,
did hit him because of what he was supposedly doing to their beloved jazz.
Yeah, and
he
then
was
with,
just completely reinventing it in his own language.
And then with Beef Art, you have that kind of chaos, but you have these wonderful Howlin' Wolf vocals.
Oh, yeah.
Big-eyed beans from Venus. Oh, my, oh, my. Boys and girls, Earth people around the circle, mixtures of man alike. Big-eyed beans from Venus, don't let anything get in between us.
He was a genius vocalist. He was a great instrumentalist. The band were a bunch of virtuosos. People don't realize how great those guys were to understand. I mean, his instructions would be like, Mr. Zudhorn Rollo, hit that long lunar note and let it float.
Right,
you know,
right.
In the middle of Big Eyed Beans from Venus.
Mr. Zudhorn Rollo, hit that long lunar note and let it float.
I mean, this guy was throwing out instructions, obtuse, angular. I mean, those words get thrown around with him. I think he was trying to create a language here. He was,
mm-hmm,
creating a language that was his own. He didn't want it to belong to anyone else except him. So the intent was to confuse and disturb and subvert and disrupt. But it wasn't because he just liked screwing around with people, although I'm sure he did that as well. It was more about creating art that was very much representing his own voice, his own self-constructed world.
Well,
that's what's so appealing to artists like P.J. Harvey,
yeah,
and Devo and Strummer
and
all
on
the
and
rest
on
who loved him.
I think, Greg, a key to understanding him, and this came late in his career, he was on the Letterman show. And he was asked many times throughout his long career, where does the name Beefheart come from, right? And he gave different answer every,
yeah,
time. That's the thing. You're going to get something different from Beefheart every time. But he told David Letterman, I have a beef in my heart against this society, right? He did not want to be cookie cutter. He was a true original, and he thought we all should be, because won't the world be more interesting? Now, granted, that doesn't mean you're going to love his music.
Mm-hmm.
It might be too original for you, or too unique, or just too chaotic, but we're going to try to illuminate why we love it. After a quick break, we'll get more into the legacy and legend of Captain Beefheart by talking to his collaborator, Gary Lucas. Then we'll each give you a quintessential Captain Beefheart track we can't live without. Plus, Greg will pay tribute to the late jazz pianist, Cecil Taylor. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.